the times they are a-changing.
That guy's pretty good. I think he's got a future. Who's that singer? I think he's going to make it. This is Eric Mann with Damon Azali. We're on Voices from the Frontlines, the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. And I'm on the phone with Ted Glick, or he's on the phone with us.
And hi, Eric. I'm here.
How you doing, Ted?
I'm all right.
Ted, you've been, sometimes I think you're a one-person cottage industry. You're generating a lot of thoughtful commentaries for the last, I've known you for, do you go back to SNCC? Do you go back to yourself to that period?
I go back to the Vietnam War. I became active. The Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement were what motivated me. It was 1968, and specifically the assassination of Martin Luther King moved me on to the activist path.
Well, you say you've been doing pretty good. We're in a similar time zone, a time warp or something. Let's talk a little bit about the Green Party right now and your efforts to try to influence it and your perceptions of it. I want to thank you for the review you did of my book, 2004 Elections. What's it called? 2004 Elections, Turning Point for the U.S. Left. That's what it is. So very thoughtful and constructive, and you know, we have some of our disagreements on the role of the Greens. Let's start with more analytical. How's David Cobb doing? How are the Greens doing? And what's it like without Ralph Nader? You know, and having that level of name recognition. Why don't you tell us a little bit what their dilemmas are and what their successes are so far?
Okay, well, David's running a very, David and Pat LaMarche, Patricia LaMarche, his vice presidential candidate, are running a very activist campaign. David personally has probably been in about 45 states over the course of the year, many of them before the Green Party's national convention in Milwaukee, where he was nominated, and a chunk of them since then. I just saw recently that there is a pretty hard figure that he's had 500 newspaper or radio or television interviews or stories about, you know, about the campaign. So he is definitely getting out there. There is, and this is by no means just progressive left media. It's the vast majority of it is mainstream. Much of it is local newspapers and local radio. There is no question but that a presidential campaign, certainly a Green Party presidential campaign, generates interest on the part of media, certainly not the major national media, but at more local levels. So he's definitely spreading the word, getting out issues, addressing issues that are not being addressed by and large, of course, by the Democrats or Republicans. There's no question, though, that this is a kind of a transitional campaign, transitional period for the National Green Party. It was not an easy decision for the Green Party to essentially break from Ralph Nader, given his role in the past. There's no question that he contributed a lot to getting the Green Party to where it is, but it was also, in my opinion, and the opinion of a majority of the delegates at Milwaukee, that it was time to move on, particularly since he had made his decision that he didn't want the Green Party's nomination and he wanted to run an independent campaign. And there's no question but that there continues to be very real divisions within the Green Party, although the vast majority of the states, of the state organizations, are following through on the decision of the National Party to run David Cobb. Just this weekend, as a matter of fact, the Vermont Green Party made a decision that they would not put David Cobb on the ballot in Vermont. They're a ballot-qualified party, and they decided not to put him on. And
did they decide to put Nader on?
They actually didn't. Nader is going to be on because he petitioned, that people up there petitioned to put him on as an independent.
Okay.
There's a possibility the same thing may happen in Utah. It actually is in court right now. There was kind of an uprising among rank-and-file Greens in Utah against a very undemocratic decision by a few of the leaders who put who tried to put Nader and Kamau on the ballot, and that's now being litigated. The rank and file Greens in Utah essentially kind of took back their party, really. And it may well be that Cobb and LaMarche will be on the ballot in Utah. So those are the two most concrete manifestations and reflections of a lot of stuff that is still going on.
Can I just ask, is the California situation resolved?
It seems like it. I don't have a real good feel for how it all is on the ground now, but it was resolved, and Cobb and LaMarche will be on the ballot as the Green Party candidates. There is a organized write-in campaign that's happening for Nader and Kamau. I believe that in the long run that this definitely has been a very important development for the Green Party. I think that there were a lot of very good reasons for making the decision that was made. I could go on. Maybe you should ask.
Yeah, I am. One of the concerns, the Greens are in a dilemma, which is, let me say, if I can say from the outside, while Nader did contribute to the development of the Greens, and certainly vice versa, as he's seeing now, I think he's seeing the tremendous loss of having a party as opposed to being a, quote, independent candidate. We're living at a time when people have lost so much hope that it takes almost like a known commodity, Ralph Nader being a good commodity, certainly, with all of my problems with him, or an Arnold Schwarzenegger, that can almost take a party beyond its actual capacity to organize a grassroots movement. So that's the strength of a Nader. The weakness is that he's a very lone ranger. I mean, that's what I said in my book. He's not going to do grassroots work in between the 4 years of the election. He's not going to go and help people figure out how to build green networks and green parties and stuff like that.
Right.
So you make the choice to go with a David Cobb, who's a guy who's actually committed to building the organization, who talks like an organizer, in my opinion, more than a candidate. That's his strength. His weakness is in a media dictatorship. Poor Ralph Nader is getting killed as a public figure. I mean, he's getting blacked out. So, yes, David got 500 interviews, but there's a very big difference voting for someone who you hardly know but who's a really good speaker and representing a party versus someone who's an independent commodity who happens to be on a ballot line. And it seems to me that's the conflict that you're arguing that the Greens had to resolve. They had to sort of bite the bullet and accept less votes in return, theoretically, for building out the actual structure of the organization. Is that a fair?
Absolutely. Well, no question about it. I would say the primary reason why David Cobb won was because he had demonstrated in practice, and he was saying this in what he was putting forward as to why he was running and the type of campaign that he would run if he was the nominee. He was very committed to building the Green Party. That was the whole purpose of his campaign. In fact, he was critical of Nader and a number of the ways that Nader was, there were very serious problems really with Nader in his relationship with the Green Party in the year 2000 with his presidential campaign from the standpoint of building the party, that there were real, real serious problems in that relationship in many cases. So that was what won it for David. I don't think there's any question but that, in a general sense, in the abstract, it is better to have somebody who is well known, who you can trust, running for office. You know, someone who you can politically trust, who you have some reason to believe is going to work with the party and function in a reasonably responsible and democratic way. But you know, the hard reality of the situation for the Green Party was that there were no well-known people. I personally was hoping that Cynthia McKinney from Georgia,
yes,
would be willing to be the Green Party's candidate. I thought that would be a very significant development as an African American woman, a member of Congress, you know, very strong, and as somebody who was very much committed to getting Bush out of office. I had confidence that she would run the type of campaign that could both help to get Bush out of office, but also build the Green Party and address what clearly is a continuing reality for the Green Party, that it's has its roots very much in the environmental movement and in other predominantly white movements and constituencies, and that though there is work going on to deal with racism for sure within the organization, and though there are individuals from the Latino and Native American and African American communities who are very active in the Green Party various places and play important roles, it's clearly it has a particular reality to it that isn't going to be changed overnight, and quite frankly, I don't know if it will ever be changed. My own personal view in terms of the type of a political party that we need in this country is that it's going to emerge as an alliance of the Green Party with a significant political motion coming out of communities of color, out of the more progressive sectors of the labor movement, the women's movement, lesbian and gay movement, that it's going to take the character, actually a lot of what the Rainbow Coalition was about in the 1980s, something that had some significant leadership from people of color right at the core of it, and that was also then able to bring together this broad coalition.
Ted, hold it there. Let me get Damon in.
So, Ted, I don't know if you remember, about 3.5 years ago, I was working with an organization called Soul from Oakland, and I came to Washington, D.C., and this is exactly kind of the stuff that was coming out of it, was saying that they need to reconstruct the Rainbow Coalition. And so I wanted to see what your thoughts were in terms of the Green Party fitting into that. I mean, you were kind of alluding to it, but if one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it definitely is would be a very important component of something like that that I do hope can emerge after this election. As a matter of fact, I think that it would be I think it's clearly needed. There are some currents out there. There are some things at work that could generate some of the energy and the dynamic to make that possible. And I think the Green Party would be able to play and could play a very important role in that. One thing that it could do beyond just the numbers, the organization that it could bring to it, it has a lot of electoral experience, very concrete electoral experience on the ground in terms of running independent candidacies, third-party candidacies. That is not the same thing as running a Democratic Party campaign, and there.
When you were starting to talk about how the leadership coming from people of color movements, from the progressive wing of the labor movements, how does that make that connection to actually influence the Green Party to get more folks of color involved to push? You know, how does that happen?
How has it happened, or
how do you envision it seeing happen? How do you envision it? Just kind of continue what your thought was.
Well, again, it is happening. I mean, it's not a uniform process, and it's certainly uneven. And honestly, I'm involved right now in some email exchanges with some fellow Greens that are a little disturbing, to be very honest, in terms of some of their views. So by no means. Is the Green Party the type of a political instrumentality in terms of this across the board that I would like to see? Most things in life aren't like that. Most things in life aren't even. And so, I know that there are definitely leadership people on a national level, I'm sure, in many of the states. Who would welcome the opportunity to link up in a broader way. In fact, right now, there's a coalition that I'm helping to move forward, organizing a Vote for Racial Justice Week, the week of October 18th through the 24th. And one of the organizations that is part of that is the National Green Party, in addition to the Black Radical Congress, Black Voices for Peace, Project South, the Southern Anti-Racism Network, the League of Pissed Off Voters, and a number of other groups. So that to the extent to which the Green Party works concretely in broader coalitions, the extent to which it respects the leadership from people of color, works in a way that builds trust. To that extent, will the Green Party, I think, continue to work on its weaknesses and grow and develop in a positive way.
Well, I want to do two things, Ted. This is Eric Mann at KPFK 90.7 FM. We're with Ted Glick and the Independent Progressive Politics Network, and I want to do two things. I want to raise a concern of about the sort of how it's going to happen, but then I'd like you to amplify a little bit about Racism Watch and the Racial Justice Week, what it would really look like. My sense is that I think that a lot of the people in the Green Party would be very valuable if there was a whole new development of, most likely, which I'll get to, black-led political insurgency, as opposed to thinking, and I think you may agree with this, predominantly white structures have never, ever, that I know, generated multiracial structures led by oppressed nationality people. Just never has happened. I think the particular thing that's going on is, in our lifetime, will there be a black break with the Democratic Party that could be as simple, not as simple, as profound as a Cynthia McKinney or a Jesse Jackson or Jesse Jackson Jr. or someone we don't know, but someone who has the national visibility and following to take the risk to sever their ties with the Democratic Party and run a third party, which I don't think would lead, by the way, to the majority of black people breaking with the Democratic Party, not in the first couple of elections, but that would be worth considering the right coming to power, if you know what I mean. That would be, to me, if that led to a Democratic defeat, which is part of the right, and leading to an even farther right coming to power, that would be a calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, Cynthia McKinney obviously was fortunate enough to win the Democratic primary, is that correct? And is,
yes.
So she's going to go back to be the left wing of the Democratic Party, which is a very valuable role for her to play. But I think we knew that when you and I both worked on the Rainbow in 84 and 88, after seeing how Jesse Jackson did incredibly well in 88 and then was really pushed to the back of the bus and did not break with the Democrats in 88, that led to the dilemma of when will black people, not when will black, when will some high visibility left black people break with the Democratic Party? That's what I think it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then many people in the Greens who have that experience would join it in a hot minute. And as you know, some people in the Greens would not. Some people in the Greens, I think, prefer a predominantly white country. They don't think so, but that's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of that? And then we'll get to the Racial Justice Week.
Right. I do agree with you that I think it, I also know of no examples and my own personal experience over, the 35 or so years that I've been an activist also lead me to the conclusion that I think it is almost impossible for a group that is predominantly white, overwhelmingly white, to, in and of itself, to become much more significantly people of color-led vehicle. I do know of a few examples on local levels, but certainly something like the National Green Party, I think it's extremely, extremely unlikely. So I agree with you on that. It's interesting. Just today, I can't.
Ted, you got 2 minutes. I'm sorry. You've been doing great. Get to Racism Watch because I want you to push it find for people to be able to get in touch with you.
Okay. Quick thing. Just today, I got an email from somebody who's very prominent within some of the circles you're talking about in terms of black leadership, who sent me on privately an email he had sent to a top person in the Democratic Party that was very bitter about the way in which the Kerry campaign has been taking African Americans for granted.
That's right.
And indeed, not just that, setting up, going about trying to get the black vote in a way that is disrespectful of black-led organizations who have been working for many, many, many months to mobilize the African American electorate. So, there are some things there. So let's hope that some things generate out of all of that ferment that I think does seem to be some of which is out there. Racism, the Road for Racial Justice Week, again, this is an initiative of 12 organizations have called this, are working together to make it happen. What we've essentially done is put forward a framework that we hope local activists will pick up on, and local activists, local groups, local coalitions will determine what are the best forms of activity that they can do on a local level to during this week. Of the October 18th through the 24th to get issues of racial justice out there into the political debate and very much connected to that, be involved in a process of mobilizing communities of color as well as progressive whites who understand racism for what it is.
Ted, I'm going to have to cut it there.
The website?
Yes, give us the website and the phone.
RacismWatch.org, www.racismwatch.org. Phone number 973-338-5398.
Great having you on the show, and we can continue to talk to you. A very good discussion.
Right, bye.
We'll be right back with Ed Avall, who is from the USC School of Medicine, talking about a recent survey that is talking about the effects of air pollution on children's lungs.